It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the work to maintain the over century-old Wisconsin State Capitol building that houses the chambers where all state legislation flows. The State Capitol is a National Historic Landmark, and Jeff LeMay is decorative painter for the building. Questions and comments are welcome. Call in at 800-642-1234 for conversation. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So touching up the paint on the walls and the trim of a 106-year-old state capitol building, that's only, I understand, part of what you do. What features of the building are you responsible for maintaining?
I'm responsible for all the painted decoration in the capitol and exterior and interior, including the statues up on the top, and maintaining the Hague statue and the Forward statue.
Wow. So you go up high. Are you okay with heights?
Yes. Yes, I am. Yes. You have to be okay with heights to work here. I'll tell you that.
How physically demanding is the work?
Sometimes it is. We redid all the windows last summer and this summer on the first four floors, which are 524 windows. And, you know, in the summer when it's 90-some degrees doing windows, it gets a little taxing out there. But
you said 524 windows?
Yes, that are just on the first four floors. And then there's more up on the eighth level and then up in the up on the top.
I wonder, does it become quite a bit tedious, like to do the same technique over and over and over?
Well, on them ones, what's interesting, the windows are cherry, which is pretty cool. Mm. And so it's, you know, it's important to maintain them because, you know, they're expensive to replace. So, you know, an ounce of prevention really works for them. So I did them 11 years ago and I did them this year. So we try to keep a schedule for them.
How do you prioritize what needs restoration?
Well, it kind of prioritizes itself, sort of. You know, the original decoration that's over 100 years old, that's high priority to maintain that. And, you know, the restoration was started in 1990 and finished in 2002. So my job is really to make sure that is maintained to the highest level and not to let it, you know, degrade any at all, to be honest with you. So that's my job.
Some people are wondering, how did you get this job? How did you become the decorative painter for the state capitol?
Well, very lucky, to be honest. You see, I was recommended, and then they give me a little test, which I didn't know was a test. I had to touch up paint in 16 rooms, which was really hard to find, to be honest with you, because you have to know your way around the capitol a little bit. So it took me a while to navigate that, but I didn't realize at the time there were 600 colors at the Capitol. So I was tasked to palette match touch up because they were interested in finding out if I had that skill. And once I passed that test, I was kind of indoctrinated to helping keep the decorative paint in good condition at the Capitol.
Have you had to deal with lead paint in the building?
No, they tried to get most of the lead paint out of the building. So that hasn't really been a problem. Yeah. So that hasn't been one of my problems.
Is there a backlog of projects that you need assistance to complete, or do you face a backlog of things that really need to get done?
Well, I got to be honest with you. So the first thing I did at the Capitol was 2007. And that was, you know, five or so years after the last part of the restoration was done. And so, but it's sort of picked up as time has gone on, because even though things are restored or preserved, that doesn't mean it's still 106-year-old paint and plaster. So, you know, things still are, you know, moving on as far as age. So that's kind of what I learned is that, you know, that you do your best to keep up with things, and you just have to, you know, watch, and you know, I kind of know where the problem areas are and keep up on them.
What are the problem areas? What are the ones that you just say, doggone it?
Well, The Pastiglia, it's called Pastiglia, and it's raised plaster, and it's in the round entry areas on ground floor and first floor entries, and then it's up on third floor, and we call it the groin vaults, which are where the elevators are, and it's tricky stuff. And what I didn't realize, I've been doing work on the Pastiglia on third floor for a long time, and every time I think I got it down, it shows me I don't. And I realized because the Capitol has microclimates in it. Oh. And because it's so big, and you know that, you know, the HVAC systems have been, you know, changed over the years and that. And so it's got its own little special places that hold moisture and do different things. And so I've learned a lot about big buildings like this and how things, you know, with stone, you know, with the marble and everything, how everything reacts to changes in temperature.
Jeff LeMay is with us, decorative painter for the Wisconsin State Capitol building. As we learn about the building itself and its upkeep, you can join in questions and comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff, you mentioned the big restoration and renovation that took place between 1988 and 2002. So now here we are, over a couple decades later. Are you revisiting some of the nooks and crannies that were updated back then, or addressing what was missed?
There wasn't really anything missed, but and they did an excellent job. That was a first-class restoration of this building. It's just mainly, like I said, there's problem areas, and I think they've been problem areas probably, you know, since the building was, you know, 10, 15 years old, probably. So, you know, them are the ones that we got to, you know, keep a handle on and keep things, you know, keep things moving in the right direction there. And so, you know, that's kind of what I do. So That's what I really, and I enjoy doing it. It makes me feel good that, you know, this building is being kept up to the proper standard, which is a very high standard.
You worked closely with Mike Bath for over a decade, who started before you as a Capitol painter and restoration team member. What about knowledge transfer here on the building? How do you pass on the work? Who will do this work when you retire?
Well, that's what I've been tasked to do. That I will probably always have something to do with the Capitol, because of the years I've spent here. Like Mike, he is still here, and he's still passing on all his knowledge, which is invaluable to me and to a lot of people at the Capitol. And so, you know, he did go through the restoration and is very tied to that, and wants to make sure that the quality of that is kept up. And he's passed that on to me. I'm going to pass that on to the next person who takes over. So it's important to us that this tradition gets passed on to the next decorative painter at the Capitol.
So as this building is a National Historic Landmark, are there certain protocols you have to follow in its maintenance and in painting?
Yes, exactly. There's a number of them, but the main thing is not to do anything that can't be reversed. So if you're doing any sort of restoration or, you know, even sometimes redoing things. We're redoing the 64 panels on ground floor now. Actually, John Canning, Restoration Preservation Company, is doing that. And, you know, the main thing is they put a protective coat over everything, and then they inpaint whatever loss there is, and then they put another coating so that it can always be taken off back to the original, whatever was left. So the main thing is not to do anything that can't be reversed.
What is your, I wonder, favorite tool or gadget in painting that you always have with you?
My favorite tool or painting or gadget that I have with me? probably my headlamp. <'Cause> there's a lot of dark nooks and crannies here that aren't, very well lit. So
that's one of the things
thing
you have to have.
Have.
Yeah,
yes,
when you navigate microclimates.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there's a lot of little dark areas you got to see into.
So the state capitol often ranked among the most beautiful in the country. When people find you at work in the capitol, what do they highlight about the building?
Well, yeah, they do really say a lot how nice the building is, and how it's probably one of the, if they've seen more than one Capitol, how nice ours is and how beautiful it is. And, you know, I think it's the views and everything, you know, that you can go outside, you know, on the observation deck and all that. I think the whole presentation of the Capitol is, you know, if probably one of the best Capitols in the country for sure. And it's, you know, very highly thought of that for everybody that comes here.
How much personal pride do you take from that and those comments?
I take great pride in too. They have the grade school kids come every year, and it's really interesting to see from the kids that come from all over the state how amazed they are when they walk in this building. And that really hits home to me about what we're really doing here, is that, you know, the future generations, how in awe they are of the state capitol.
And
that's pretty cool.
They might hear from me once in a while, "Don't touch the walls. Stop touching the walls."
Yeah. Or are they told to be quiet? Because it is a working office building, so, but it's hard for them to do that.
Oh, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Anytime I can talk about the Capitol, I'm happy to.
Jeff LeMay is decorative painter for the Wisconsin State Capitol Building. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to Republican State Senator Mary Felskowski of Tomahawk as we examine her priority legislation and wildlife management issues in northern Wisconsin. Be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. You can share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. State Senator Felskowski, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning, and thanks for having me.
Looking at the calendar, this month you're holding a public discussion in Woodruff about the year's gun deer hunting season. What are you hoping to learn from people who attend?
Well, I know what we're going to learn from people that attend, because my phone has been blowing up ever before hunting season as well as during hunting season. You know, hunting has always been the backbone of northern Wisconsin. It's a family tradition. It's an economic driver. And this year, people that have hunted up here for decades, and I'm not exaggerating on that, really had a hard time. A lot of them have cited that they never saw a brown hare the entire deer hunt. But what they did see is an abundance of the wolf population, as well as other predators. And I think where people are very upset, because they do not feel that the DNR is managing. You know, and we had an informational hearing in Park Falls a little while ago, and the DNR manages each population, whether it's bear, wolf, cougar, bobcat, whatever. They hunt, they manage them independently instead of managing them as a cohesive group. And I think our hunters are to the point where, when are you going to start listening to us? When are we going to take a look at managing our predator population? And what else can we do to increase the deer population in northern Wisconsin? You know, maybe that's where we stop hunting antlers and we do some other things where we try to increase that deer population again, because it is, once again, it's a huge economic driver in northern Wisconsin, as well as, you know, part of a great family tradition.
Is there legislation afoot, or are you crafting legislation to address these issues that are related to deer or related to DNR management?
Well, as you very well know, there's the wolf management plan out there that we have objected to. And there was legislation that was put out there to make sure that the DNR includes a number based on science around the wolf population. And that has been a non-starter for Governor Evers and the DNR. and people that are proponents of wolves in the state of Wisconsin. You know, and again, even your deer hunters, they are fine with wolves as long as it's a managed and sustainable population, which is something that's not happening right now. And I think Senator Romaine Quinn and some representatives had one of these listening sessions yet Saturday, and I think we're going to be having ours, and we'll see what happens and what the consensus is from the people that actually live and work in the area and are subject to an increased wolf population. And I think then, you know, legislation would be pending based on that.
Do you think that, you know, I mean, people are compensated when they have a loss due to a wolf, the Wisconsin wolf depredation? Is there doing enough to mitigate through that program with the threat of wolves?
So we do have the depredation, and it is prorated based on the amount of the loss. But that's more for your farm animals, that's for dogs, that's for hunting dogs, you know, that's for your pets that we see issues happening up here, like if your pet is attacked in your backyard, which we've had. But that doesn't do anything for the overall deer population, and that doesn't do anything for the businesses that depend on the hunters and the economics. I was just in Oconto County last night for an event, and I had hotel owners and I had bar owners tell me that they, you know, hotel owners that will normally have a waiting list for deer season were not full this year. People are just tired of not seeing anything and that tradition going by the wayside. And we are losing a hunting population because of the lack of management. And, you know, once people become disenfranchised with not hunting here, you know, they don't come back. I just had friends that sold land and actually ended up buying hunting land in Missouri because of the way that the DNR in Missouri manages, and they actually have a good hunting experience. So we need to do something. We need to do something very soon. But the first thing we need to do is convince the governor, convince the department, and convince some of my liberal friends that there's actually an issue.
Talking with Republican State Senator Mary Felskowski, represents the northeastern corner of Wisconsin. Felskowski, a member of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, you can join in with questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Turning to childcare, you're the co-author of five bills in the legislature that aim to address concerns of childcare. The proposals received public hearing in October. What are your top priorities for improving childcare?
Access would be number one. I think that, you know, the package of bills that we put together, we actually upped payments to low-income people, and then we soften the cliff, the fiscal cliff that everybody talks about. But I think more important, there's money out there for grants to start up childcare centers. We're encouraging public-private partnerships. When I say, I shouldn't say public-private, but employer-based partnerships with childcare facilities. We've seen some of those spring up where a group of employers will get together. This gives them seed money to help increase the numbers. And that's what we're really looking at doing, is increasing the access and increasing the numbers.
How do you create stability for childcare centers that, you know, they don't want to keep upping and upping tuition, but they also need to keep their doors open and to keep employing staff? You know, what is your approach to that?
So my question would be, why do we not want to up tuition?
Do you think that families are having difficulty making ends meet when
Well,
their
in
paycheck
this,
is going perhaps, you know, a lot of it to childcare?
in the world of the inflation and Biden economics, where we stop producing oil is through the roof, where we're 31 trillion in debt, of course families are having a hard time making ends meet because of the policies of our federal government. I mean, that's obvious. But the reality is, when I go to these childcare centers, I'm like, do you have a waiting list? And they do. I am not only a legislator, but I'm a small business employer. And I just had an employee come to me and say, you know what, if you want to keep me, Mary, it's going to cost you X more because I just got a different job offer. Employers, if a young woman or a mom or a dad goes to their employer and says, look, I can't continue to work for you at this wage because I need to pay childcare, then the employer has to make that decision. But instead of taking taxpayer dollars and subsidizing it, why aren't we? Governor Evers has vetoed every single tax cut that we've put out there. instead of taking those dollars and putting it towards childcare, why aren't we giving it back to the families so that they can utilize it when they need childcare? And then maybe they have school sports, and maybe then they have insurance rates because their kids are now in the teenage years. How about college, tutoring, music lessons? Families need different money at different times in their life. And why aren't we just returning that money to them and allowing them to utilize it? We also increase the tax deduction around childcare. There's two ways to approach it, and it's not always government subsidized that work for it. Give the money back to the people and allow them to spend it on their families when their families need it most. Childcare is a period in time. And then there's a whole lot of other expenses that come along with raising children.
I want to turn our attention here to tribal gambling funds. In October, you voted as a member of the Finance Committee, Legislature's Finance Committee, to withhold $2 million in gambling funds from two bands of the Lake Superior Chippewa. What are you seeking to happen before authorizing this funding?
So if you have been following what's happening around Lac du Flambeau, I think that the tribe acted very, very poorly. They do have the law on their side, and I do not disagree with that. But as I said to Chairman Johnson a long time ago, when I finally had a phone call with him, there's ways to settle disputes in the United States, and that is in our justice system. So instead of barricading people out of their homes that have absolutely no dog in this fight and didn't even know anything about this, I mean, I had a woman that actually had to move to Iowa because she has a disabled child, and they were not allowed for the services for that disabled child to go down the road so that the child could get those services.
Are you still in talks with President Johnson of the Lac du Flambeau tribe of Lake Superior Chippewa? How would you describe that relationship?
There is none. Chairman Johnson returned a call to me once. And that was to ask me to have other legislators not talk bad about them. That's when I suggested that the court system is a remedy on this. I've had numerous conversations with the chairman of Lac du Flambeau, Matt Galke. In fact, I will be having another one later today. So I did send a letter to Chairman Johnson asking to start a conversation. His response is that he needed his attorney to review it before he would comment.
So what are next steps then? What are you seeking in order to dispense these funds?
So I think the biggest thing is an open line of communication and a promise from the chairman that those barricades do not go back up no matter what happens. I would actually like to see that in writing, because now the chairman, the Lac du Flambeau tribe, just is seeking another $9.6 million from the town for back whatever, even though that the title company is currently paying them money every single month to keep those roads open. This is something that will be settled in the court system. Governor Evers and his team worked very hard to try to establish communication and broker a deal. I, as a legislator, tried to establish communication and broker a deal, and the chairman and the tribe, Lac du Flambeau, were not interested in that. Instead, they took very drastic measures against their neighbors. I would like to see this resolved. And in all honesty, the federal government is the one that needs to step in, because the treaties are federal treaties. And they're the ones that are going to have to help come up with resolution in this.
State Senator,
in the meantime, I think by withholding the funds, we keep the attention of the chairman. And I'm hoping that that will help be an incentive to open up communication.
State Senator Felskowski, thank you for joining us.
You bet. Thank you for having me on.
Mary Felskowski, Republican, State Senator serving District 12. It's a State Capitol Report on the morning show on the Ideas Network.